Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A man holds up traffic on the Glen Jackson Bridge with his suicide attempt. There's a copycat acid-flinging attack, and John Lennon's killer Mark David Chapman is denied parole the sixth time.
Not supposed to give it away.
Oh.
Leave them in suspense about Mark David Chapman.
Mark David Chapman's up for parole.
It's too late.
Guess what happens?
You've ruined it. Can't have nice things. As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and now a suspenseless ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely all of the spoiler-filled news that you need for Tuesday, September 7th, 2010.
Fantastic.
John Lennon's killer, Mark David Chapman, is going free.
No, he's not.
He's gonna keep sitting in jail, watching the wheels go round.
See, that's all in the inflection there. Because first I did the no, and then I did the no. See what I did there?
Said I did a little John Lennon thing.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, that came from the AP story because somebody at the Associated Press was being clever.
Really? Did they say actually watching the wheels?
Yeah. John Lennon's killer would continue watching the wheels go round from behind bars after being denied parole. They get bored at the Associated Press.
But I mean, I would think that they would be sort of, that they would think that was gauche. They would, aren't they the gold standard? Aren't they the world's premier news disseminating organization?
They might very well be, but you know something?
F them. That's
with
what
our,
I know.
With our idiocracy-headed society, you know, it's just where it's going.
I'm glad
pretty soon the New York Times is going to be a coloring book.
I would totally buy the New York Times coloring book, where it's just, where it has some sort of pithy discourse on the nature of the spice trade in 1645.
It's some bar graph about economics, and it comes with like a three crayons, so that while you're sitting there with your espresso in the morning, you can just color in the bar graph.
So sort of a paint by numbers three panel retrospective on the work of Spalding Gray. At least they didn't do the delayed karma is going to get him or something like that, or they're watching the wheels. Delayed karma is going to get him. What else is there? I'm trying to think if there's something. Some other.
He's sitting in prison with his face in a jar by the door. No, okay, that doesn't work.
No, that didn't work at all. No. I think we're at the end of that road. All right, sorry about that.
Mark David Chapman met with a three-member parole board panel.
Laughed hysterically at his pleas for clemency.
At the Attica Correctional Facility via video conference. Chapman was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison after he was convicted of shooting the ex-Beatle four times outside his apartment on December 8th, 1980. He has served nearly 30 years of his sentence. Chapman is next eligible to try for parole in 2 years.
Let's all set the date right now, shall we?
Yeah, Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, had reiterated her desire to the parole board that Chapman never, ever, 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 ever get out of jail.
Which I'm fine with, and it just puts me in the distinctly uncomfortable position of being in the same side of an issue as Yoko Ono. Did you hear, have you heard that the 3-minute orgasm?
You know what I'm talking about? I know of it from our friend Sarah X. Dillon, and I have not.
Would you like to hear it?
No.
Would you like to hear it?
No.
Would you like to hear it?
No.
You're going to hear it.
No.
So it's this thing that she did at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Alleged Art. So it's a...
To be fair, some of the stuff that Yoko Ono has done in the past,
like the stuff
she was doing when Lennon first met her, and she was more of a visual artist, actually some of it was very interesting.
We're getting a call from overseas. That's what I get for... No, I accidentally answered it. No. Prank caller. No, I'm turning it off. No,
it might have been Yoko Ono.
Too late now. We'll never know. I'm sorry. That's my... I left the phone on.
Rick, don't play my orgasm.
That was my sort of Xena meets Yoko Ono. Yeah. I was going to make a Xena joke earlier, actually, where it was like her flinging herself out of a tree at Gabrielle, you know? And then Sam Raimi shows up and everyone laughs. I will play a little bit of this just because it's, you know, it was theoretically news, I guess. So Sarah came in the other day, and it's one of those things, and you and I have done this, where it's like when there's some particularly horrific video going on the internet and you are hoping that no one you know has seen it so that you can be the first to inflict it on them. And Sarah said, like, oh, my God, have you heard the thing of Yoko Ono having a three-minute orgasm? And I said, why would you ever say that? And I guess she was doing it as some crap exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art.
And now you're going to inflict it on me and our listeners.
And it's a thing that can never be unheard. So there's not even really any background to give to this. It's just goddamn Yoko Ono standing in the middle of a stage at the Museum of Modern Art, faking an orgasm for 3 minutes, and it's just, and I'm not going to play all 3 minutes of it because you sort of get the point. Here's the thing, it's actually so unpleasant, I almost don't want to play it again, and yet
I wish I was a crazy millionaire.
All right,
that
so
would
this
be
is
awesome,
just, let's
that
see if I can
do crazy
millionaire. And of course, and she's, you know, and it's got her on the big, she's walking to the middle of the stage, and she's wearing like a stupid, like a top hat or something, and, you know, and I don't know, everybody's standing around staring at her like she really matters and whatever. So I'll just play you a little bit of this. Once again, I swear to God, I'm not making this up.
Okay.
This is from the Museum of Modern Art in New York City, from where culture comes.
You know, I can watch this thing on Meebo that shows how many people are listening, and then when they
zero.
Go, they switch to offline.
Yeah,
and we just lost like 5 people.
Oh, there you go. So this is almost worth having as one of those things to clear kids out of a 7-Eleven parking lot late at night.
Oh, please make it stop, please.
You
please,
know, and of course,
please.
And the museum is just filled with white people who are sitting there staring at her and then doing the golf sort of like. No, well done. She's an artist. Don't Worry, Kyoto was one of the best rock and roll records of all time, you know. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk. Don't forget, by the way, this program is available on your handheld device as well. Mobile.pdx.fm, also via iTunes and in archived form right here on legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
A 39-year-old man threatening to jump from the Glen Jackson Bridge, probably because he just listened to Yoko Ono fake an orgasm for 3 minutes.
What'd I do?
Created a big traffic backup for holiday drivers on Monday. Portland police were called to a report of a distraught man on the northbound side of the Interstate 205 bridge at about 6 p.m. The man was sitting in his truck when officers arrived. He waved at them and then drove away at a slow speed. Portland police followed the man, and he eventually returned to the southbound side of the bridge. At mid-span, he stepped out of his truck and climbed over the railing. One of the officers started a conversation with the man as police called in a hostage negotiation team and a special emergency response
team. Who's being held hostage, except for people who are trying to get to work or to the families or to have a life?
I think those are the only negotiation people we have. We don't have, like, separate suicide negotiators. We just have negotiators. But their primary purpose is hostage.
They're just sort of, they're all lumped under one. I wonder which is the more exciting call to go on. Well, probably the actual hostage call is more exciting. I wonder which call they prefer. Because you got to figure, on the one hand, with the hostage situation, there's, you know, drama and thrill and glory. But then with this one, at least, you know, the bare minimum is that if the guy just tosses himself a bridge, well, he was kind of threatening to do that anyway. He doesn't take, like, a family of 5 with him.
Well, at about 8:40, police were able to talk the man off the outside railing and take him into custody. He was taken to a nearby hospital.
I'm stunned. I'm shocked. I'm amazed.
I have a newspaper clipping
Jackass.
At home somewhere. My father, who was a fireman, but before he was a fireman, he was a cop. And I have this newspaper clipping from when he was a policeman, and he used to walk a beat in Redondo Beach, California, down by the pier. And he saved this woman's life. And essentially what she had done is she had climbed over the railing of the pier and was going to jump in and kill herself. Then she changed her mind, and when she was climbing back over, she fell in.
That's fantastic. And did he? I wonder if he waited for a while just to sort of go, do you really?
You sure?
I could come save you or not. It's up to you, crazy lady.
So, yeah, so I have this whole, you know, local cop is a hero and saved this one. And then you read the story and it's like, oh, I was going to kill myself and change my mind, but then I was stupid and I fell in.
Well, because they always, the sons of bitches, they always do it on a holiday or during rush hour. That's the thing. It's when the maximum number of people are going to be there to witness their drama queening before they invariably just give up like a pussy. And yeah. Slink off, you know, to wherever it is you're going to be slunk to without actually just accomplishing. How hard is it? It's a binary process. One jumps or one does not jump.
Although, you know, not always, though. I mean, when I worked at the Columbia County newspaper, the, yes. the Hooterville Times,
yes.
I covered a story there at one point when a man had jumped off the Lewis and Clark Bridge, that huge, hugely tall bridge.
That's a serious bridge.
Yeah. And what had happened is the story started with them finding his car at like 6 o'clock in the morning, just parked on the bridge.
Now, but I mean, but he had already jumped. In other words,
yes.
He
was not drama queening. He drove his car up there, got out of it, and jumped.
That's what I mean. That's the thing. Like, if you see the guy on the bridge and he's just sort of prevaricating, like, that's not a guy who's going to jump. He's just going to be there all day, and then he's going to give up, you know, and he's going to go home and watch Family Feud. The guy
that
is going to jump.
Bridge is like.
Well, that's no fooling. That's,
no.
That's like when you're
dead.
Serious. Yeah. Have you seen that documentary, The Bridge?
Yes.
Oh,
that's the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah, about the Golden Gate Bridge and those guys who just tossed themselves off of it. So it just seems like that is one of those things where. I was going to say that suicide is not that difficult, but I guess any number of people screw it up every year.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe it's harder than it seems like at first blush, but jumping is not hard. Let's put it that way. Now, you may not be successful in what you're hoping to get done there, but it's not like jumping takes a lot of, you know. Jumping's a thing you can almost do by accident. It's called falling.
Yes.
So it doesn't seem like it's all that challenging.
Investigators are looking into what they believe is a copycat acid attack that has left a second victim severely burned in her face. The second victim, Derry Velarde of Mesa, Arizona, suffered second-degree burns on her face and shoulders when a woman threw acid on her. It immediately started to just burn, said Velarde. The attack happened on September 4th in the parking lot of the woman's Arizona apartment. I opened my car door, and I see a woman walking up with looked like a drink of water in her hand, she said. She just looked at me with these eyes as if she was saying something. The stranger said nothing and instead tossed the contents of the cup, which turned out to be acid, on the unsuspecting woman. This approach differs from the attack on Bethany Starrow in Vancouver, in which the woman approached and said, "Hey, pretty girl, do you want to drink this?" The attackers in both incidents remain at large.
This world is just, I'm not saying that we're going more crazy, but I think that maybe it's the same amount of crazy happening in a smaller period of time. In other words, the crazy that would have taken 10 years to unleash on the world, maybe 100 years ago, I think we get 10 years worth of crazy, but we get it all like in one concentrated dose now. I don't know whether that's because of the influence of the media or the quickening or the whatever. This is one of those things where I can tell you're humoring me because you're waiting to say something that you see on the screen.
No, I'm waiting. I'm enjoying
every golden word that
comes from your mouth.
Was there something exceptionally witty just said?
Someone
in the text box?
Text box asked if I would do the rest of the newscast in my Yoko Ono voice.
So, you know, I can tell you have a telltale mannerism when you've seen something on the text box and it's gone into the, like, it's gone into the sort of the queue in your head, like a Netflix queue, and it's like, next up, a thing I saw on the text box. And I can tell exactly, it's like a poker tell. That's why I asked. I wasn't trying to be snarky just now when I said, like, are you waiting to speak, Don? You have this series of mannerisms that indicate that you are preparing to relay someone's thoughts.
I am never going to actually be able to play poker with you again, ever, am I now?
Well, I wasn't planning on it,
now
so
that we sit across
it's not like
the
a
table.
Thing you have to take off your social calendar, because my wife just beats me at those things anyway.
Yeah, you're kind of crappy at it.
Yeah.
Although on my birthday a couple of years ago, it came down to you and me and Laura. We were the last three standing.
Yeah, but then I went out of the three of us first, because my wife is my... I don't even play at the same table as her anymore.
Two poker games in a row, by the way, that the last two people in the tournament standing were your wife and I going head-to-head.
It helps that you're usually the two who aren't blind drunk and just sitting in a corner, gibbering at each other and making diehard references.
A NASA team that went to Chile to offer tips on how to deal with those 33 trapped miners is back in the States. NASA's Dr. James Michael Duncan says that there are some things the miners wanted that they advised Chilean officials might not be good to funnel down to the group, including alcohol.
You don't say.
We did, you know, make the suggestion that alcohol probably wasn't in their best interest at this moment.
I guess, although really, how can things get any worse? I mean, I guess they could be stabbing each other, eating each other or something, but that's inevitable. That seems inevitable regardless.
But it also makes sense that that's probably one of the first things they asked for.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, the food, the paste in a tube that you're sending out to keep us alive, that's great. But whiskey.
Yeah.
Whiskey would be nice. I'm trapped in a 5-foot by 10-foot room with 32 guys.
I can't even, and soon, you know, and the other thing is, do they have cameras that are down there sort of checking the guys out? Like, are they able to see what's happening in the mine?
This would be the most awesome reality show, by the way. Why aren't we all watching this 24 hours a day?
Okay, look, you damn woman, you're doing that thing right now where you're lifting one of my... I said that here on this show like 2 weeks ago. I said Mark Burnett is on the phone like right now, making this into a reality show. That's a little intellectual pickpocketry is what you were just engaging in there.
It took like 2 weeks for it to actually percolate in my brain to the point where I thought it was my own idea.
That's how far ahead of the cultural curve I am. Yeah. I am 2 weeks. This is like that thing I've said about a Noah's Ark reality show. In like a year, so you've already laughed, but in a year, you're going to turn on the television and that's going to be on. It's going to be on the Discovery Channel where a guy's building a goddamn ark. It's like my thing I was saying before we came on the air today. There needs to be a Juggalo reality show. And you went, ah, that's interesting. And then you went back to working whatever you're working on. 6 months from now, there's going to be some, you know, living with the Juggalos or, you know, the Juggalo next door or my mother, the Juggalo.
Clown crazy.
Yeah, my favorite Juggalo. And you will say, well, what a great idea, Rick. Why don't you ever have ideas like that? And then I'll just sort of brood.
And you'll punch me.
Yes. Yes, I will.
I also, NASA's Dr. James Michael Duncan, I saw that and I immediately in my head saw
from the Green Mile.
I saw Michael Clark Duncan in a white coat.
The Kingpin had this to say.
Duncan says there were some things the miners wanted that they advised Chilean officials it might not be good to give them, like alcohol and also cigarettes.
Given the confined conditions and the low atmospheric turnover of the chamber that they're in, we did not feel that that was a good situation.
Hey, we'd like whiskey and fire in this tiny little hole where there's like 50 of us.
We want cigars. We want to just turn this into a cigar bar.
Hey, and can we get a thing that just doesn't really have any purpose but is just outfitted with whirling blades that occasionally turns on?
And all 33 of us want to eat nothing but chili for the next week.
And a gun. All right, here's Don Taylor.
A man who scaled the exterior of a 58-story downtown skyscraper Monday and unfurled an American flag at the top was arrested. Police said the man was 54-year-old veteran skyscraper climber Dan Goodwin, who has scaled several tall buildings, including the Sears Tower. Goodwin climbed to the top of the building in San Francisco using suction cups, but no ropes or safety net. It was the Millennium Tower, a 645-foot residential building overlooking San Francisco Bay. Goodwin was too high to reach by the time firefighters arrived at the building. He refused orders to climb down. After reaching the top of the building, after 5 hours of climbing Monday evening, Goodwin affixed the American flag he had been carrying to the top and surrendered to arresting officers. According to Goodwin, he says he climbed to the top of the tower to call attention to what he described as an ongoing vulnerability of skyscrapers to terrorist attacks.
Well, fair enough. See, I dig guys like that, and it's tempting to ridicule him or to mock him because of the whole American flag thing. But if it was like a French guy climbing up there and going like, I claim this land for France, and like putting a flag, we'd be like, all right, go French guy. I mean, you know, then you put him in a cage for a few months. But still, you know, the climbing a building with suction cups is kind of awesome. I can appreciate the spunk that requires. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program is going to be coming your way a little after 1 o'clock today. Today, sci-fi fantasy author Mr. Terry Brooks, who's going to be signing at Powell's Books at Cedar Hills Crossing tomorrow. That is tomorrow, September 8th. He will be at Powell's Books at Cedar Hills Crossing signing his new book. I believe it's The Black Staff. I don't have it in front of me. And then I found out that I've been pronouncing that Shannara thing, which is how we all pronounced it. Mm-hmm. Patrick pronounced it that way, and he reads Terry Brooks. Apparently it's Shannara, or maybe he's just like effing with me to see like if I'll rib. I'm gonna throw an extra Q in there and see if the idiot DJ says Q. So anyway, so that is the latest book in the Shannara series. He's kind of a cool guy, so we're going to have that interview today. So Terry Brooks, sci-fi fantasy author, Terry Brooks today. We will also have another installment of The Greatest Songs Ever Made, plus Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch. Today, speaking of horrible sounds like that Yoko Ono thing, today might be the day that I inflict the entire Religious Nutcase Watch theme on you, the whole Striper Battle Hymn of the Republic.
All right.
Today might be that day. If you are listening to The Rick Emerson Show, you hear it at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. If not, If you are not currently subscribing, you want to listen up. The Rick Emerson Grant is something that is allowing us to give away 10 one-month subscriptions every month. So we give away 10 one-month subscriptions every month to you or somebody you know. Now, if you're already subscribing, it can be there's somebody you know. If you're not a subscriber, this could be your way to listen for a month cost-free, courtesy of our friends at New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. They do landscaping, they do yard work, and they do nuisance abatement solutions for your neighborhood or home. You just leave us a voicemail, which is probably what that ringing sound was earlier. You leave us a voicemail at 503-505-6964. 503-505-6964. And you let us know exactly why it is that you or somebody you know needs to be a listener of The Rick Emerson Show cost-free for 1 month. That is the Emerson Grant. 10 of those per month. The Emerson Grant. This is Don Taylor.
So does nuisance abatement mean that they put up, like, electrified fences to keep children off my lawn?
Yeah, but I want it to be an invisible kind so that it was sort of a surprise and a shock all at once. You know what I mean? So it was a shock literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
Sort of a, hey, maybe we'll go screw with that. Yeah! You know, and then it's just sort of like that. Have you seen that thing on French TV with the guy who touches the electrified grapes?
No.
It's awesome. I have this whole montage of YouTube videos where people are hitting their head with things or they fall over.
Of course you do.
There's this great YouTube video. I'll show it to you next hour. I don't speak French, but as best I understand it.
I'm going to write that down so you remember it, because you say you'll do things and then you just completely forget.
But that's your fault, because you're supposed to remind me. You were here to remind me to do whatever it is I'm going to do.
In head.
Anyway, there's a guy at a vineyard, and as best as I can sort of figure out from the story, it's a vineyard, and he's a reporter, and he's covering the fact that they've started to put a low-level voltage through some of the grapes to keep insects off, to keep pests away from destroying the wine crops. And so they do this by putting what they think is a very low level of voltage. And it's an old guy, and he basically says, so you mean if I were to touch this? And then he grabs a hold of the grape, and then it all hilarity and electrocution ensue. Here's Don Taylor.
The Oregon Zoo is opening a new exhibit this week for orangutans and white-cheeked gibbons.
It's called We'll Kill Your Family.
No, it's called the Red Ape Reserve Exhibit, Rick.
Oh, that's dumb.
Officials say the new exhibit will give the zoo's orangutans, Inji and Kutai, the opportunity to experience a more natural environment, including foliage and weather. Apparently, they have had no foliage or weather.
Thank you, by the way, for saying foliage, not foliage. I appreciate
that. Well, yes. The 50-year-old Inji and her grandson, Kutai, already appear to be adapting well to the new exhibit before the formal opening set for Friday. Activities will include big floor puzzles of Asian animals, crafts, games, animal talks, and a celebration of Inji's 50th birthday. I'm assuming that is what's set for the formal opening, that's not what the exhibit is going to have for the orangutans.
I was unclear about that. It sounded like that was a thing that... Like, the orangutans just sort of, they enjoy doing puzzles.
Yeah, that's what I thought. They're going to have big floor puzzles.
Well, and who knows?
And crafts.
Can I just tell you this? I can't ever really tell. Like, it seems to vary from story to story how smart and human-like those things really are. You know, it's like sometimes you hear about, well, they enjoy watching television and smoking cigarettes and, and juggling. But other times it's like they're just flinging their poo everywhere and it's like and staring at a wall. And so I can't really ever get a fix on how much they can actually do.
And as I told you, I'm catching up on Futurama. So last night I watched the evolution one with Dr. Banjo.
Yeah.
And so now I read the word orangutan and now I'm thinking of Dr. Banjo standing on top of the podium. You know, decrying evolution.
That really is a great episode, too. The Dr. Banjo guy is great. You know who they haven't brought back in a long time, though? Is the Simper Hyper Stellar Chicken. Who is the... Have you ever seen that guy?
Yes.
He's the lawyer. He's like the Matlock.
Oh, I love him.
But he's like a huge chicken in a vest with pince-nez, like, spectacles.
Well, yeah, it's a take on...
it's Matlock.
It's a
Clarence
it's a
Darrow.
It's a rip on Clarence Darrow.
Is it like an Inherit the Wind thing?
On the Scopes Monkey Trial thing, yeah.
Well, how do you know? I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm saying how do you know? Not that I'm disagreeing,
the
but how do you know that?
The suspenders are the giveaway.
He doesn't have suspenders, I don't think. I think he has a vest.
Does he?
That's why I went with Ben Matlock.
Okay, well, maybe it. But I think it's the accent and the behavior.
Ben
really.
Matlock has an accent.
Yeah. He struck me as more Clarence Darrow-ish, but although they did do a Clarence Darrow riff in...
Well, now I don't know.
...in this Evolution episode where the judge... Well, the guy says, I object, when Bender gets up and he's got suspenders on.
Right.
And the opposition attorney objects because Bender is wearing suspenders but has no pants.
Well, now I don't even know. Okay. Well, this is...
So I might be wrong. I always think of that chicken as having suspenders, but you're right. I guess he wears a vest.
Well, I guess it would make more sense, actually, in Futurama's world that it would be Clarence Darrow, because that's a little bit more of a highbrow joke. But it's funny if it's Matlock, too. I guess it works either way. Or maybe Matlock is meant to be a sort of a Clarence Darrow figure.
Mm.
But the best
part... You
are part,
blowing my mind, Rick Emerson.
It doesn't really matter, though, because even if it's a Clarence Darrow thing, it's still... It has that great graining-esque humor where it's got the highbrow and the lowbrow together because he actually will say, I may just be a simper hyperstellar chicken, but even I can say... And he'll give this really flowery argument in defense of his client, and then he'll just... And so in conclusion, like... And then he'll just start pecking at the floor of the courtroom, which is awesome. You're listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. This is Don Taylor. You're looking up the hyperstellar chicken right now.
You're right. He has a vest with like a little watch fob.
You are a compulsive wikier.
I do. I want information, and I want it now.
Here's the thing. Here's what you need to understand about this audience. The audience will find it and give you the information. I always feel like telling you, but don't bother to look that up. Like, we have people for that. They're the listeners. They'll find out, and they'll tell you because they enjoy making. They enjoy helping us be smarter.
Speaking of listeners, someone wants me to tell them that you finally watched Mad Men.
Yes.
Okay.
No, so we'll have a Mad Men recap next hour as well. And then I got – it was weird because I got the Mad Men – I don't talk about it here. But I'll just say that I got done with Mad Men, and, like, our friend Seamus finished it about the same time, apparently, because I got, like, a 15-page email from him about it. So here's Don Taylor.
A fire at Pussycat's Adult Club closed Southwest Canyon Road in Beaverton for about 90 minutes last night. Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue officials responded to the Pussycat Strip Club. And it's not really a strip club. It's one of those underwear model...
Yeah. It's like honeysuckles.
...places. Whatever it is they do in there, which I don't want to know, really.
You know what they do.
Let me read the story. In the 10,000 block of Southwest Canyon Road at about 6:40 p.m. and began to fight the fire on the west side of the building. All people inside the building were able to get out unharmed. Firefighters had most of the fire out in 10 minutes. The fire closed Southwest Canyon Road at about 100th Avenue for about 90 minutes. No damage estimates were immediately available, but the west side of the building received significant damage.
You
say I know what goes on in those places, and the truth is those are one of those things that's a complete mystery to me.
Would you like to know? I can tell you without working blue.
Okay, go ahead.
Now I wonder, I almost want to have you do like an artist sketch of it, because I'm wondering what you think goes on in there, if it's like a whole Busby Berkeley production, like in your head there that...
Yes, there's dance numbers.
It's like Hell's a Poppin' with boobs.
Oh, if only.
Have you ever seen the? I was about to say, have you ever seen the John Candy film Armed and Dangerous? But you know, those are like the little. Keep in mind, it's not like I've been to these places or whatever. But when I was, you know, guys. Well, I know guys, and also, radio stations. Radio stations get like, in some day parts, in some sections of the broadcast day, they get like 80% of their revenue from strip clubs. Bars and just businesses that cater to man's more primal needs. So I have a lot of experience with those things because there's always a lot of copy in the ads that the business will submit to you that you have to take out. I swear to God, I won't say who it was, but we got a there was a porn store that wanted to advertise on CBS, and this is when we were on 970, and I was laughably they had given me a management position for reasons that no one really I think can explain even now. But so I had this rule that I had to approve any adult commercial copy before it went on the air because they would always just try to sneak all of this crap in. It was just horrible. And I said, like, any ad for an adult business, like, I have to personally approve it before it goes on the air. Because otherwise you would get things like, where all your moist fantasies come true. Which is, I guess in retrospect, I almost should have let that go because it's sort of absurd and funny. But you would just get stuff like that all the time, bring your throbbing imagination to, it was just terrible. But there's the glass booths where a guy goes in and he puts like a buck in and the little like door, the little garage door goes up and there's a glass booth and he watches the chick gyrate
and then
the door comes down and he has to feed in another dollar. Imagine that, but with no glass or door separating him from the chick.
Okay, that's what I thought it was. It was like the ladies come into the room
and they gyrate
and take care of yourself.
Yes.
Ostensibly.
And whatever you're doing in your own, whatever you're doing while sitting down, fishing for a pocket watch, perhaps.
Although I assume there is, if enough money is put on the table, there's probably more that goes on there, even though they claim there is not.
I wouldn't know, Don. I'm not suggesting they engage in any sort of illegal behavior. But I would say that this is America, the land of capitalism, and it is it's a seller's market when it comes to those things.
Okay. So basically then to recap, what happens in those places is pretty much what I thought happens.
Would you
in
like
those
to
places.
Know the term that we at CBS used for those places?
I will tell you the term that I heard Jay Mackin use telling this story. On PDX earlier this morning.
Let me apologize in advance if it's the same term that I'm thinking of, because it's probably a universal term, so, you know, we try not to traffic in crudities here.
Of course, this is also a PDX FM, and this was also a PDX FM show, but yes.
I'm just saying.
We have people who download and don't listen to the...
It's really not that, it's just that I'm a tight ass.
Jay Mackin referred to it as a jack shack.
Yes, that is exactly what they were called.
Yeah.
And so that was that, which is funny because you would sit in like management meetings at CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System, the Tiffany Network, and you'd actually be sitting in a conference room with like, you know, men, women, people of all ages and creeds and ethnicities, and having like a business meeting. And, you know, they'd say, well, how goes it in the Crass, how goes it in the sales department? Well, sir, earnings are up. Really, Crass, by how much? 85%. Really, are we getting a better class of clients, or is it all just the usual jack shacks and bars? And that was just the terminology you would use, so.
I don't think I ever heard that term before this morning when I was listening to that, so.
So it is what you think it is.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Let's class everything up a little with some science news.
Science is on the march. This is Legion of News.
They're known as magic mushrooms, and now they're being used for their purported psychological benefits in cancer patients.
Way to class it up. You've gone from hookers to mushrooms.
This is cancer research, Rick.
Okay, sorry.
A study from the Archives of General Psychiatry, a valid scientific organization...
You don't have to convince me.
...found benefits from the use of psilocybin in treating anxiety and depression common with stage 4 cancer. Late-stage cancer patients given a moderate single dose of psilocybin were less anxious and significantly less depressed 6 months later compared with patients given a placebo. The federal government put a stop to all research of hallucinogenics as medical treatments in the 1970s. Before the crackdown, studies had shown hallucinogens could have powerful mood-enhancing effects. The culture was going through tremendous upheaval 40 years ago. Dr. Charles Grob of UCLA told Reuters, these compounds were associated with a very politically active counterculture. Everything had to be shut down. Times have changed, and it's now possible to pick up this research model again. Federal law currently prohibits psilocybin for any use.
Well, that's like that story we had. I mean, I don't mean to be cynical about it, but it's hardly breaking news that if you're stoned all the time, you're probably not going to be as anxious about everything. That's like the story we had a couple weeks ago. They said they were giving these vets who had the PTSD, they were giving them big doses of ecstasy, and amazingly enough, like they were better afterwards. So, I mean,
well, have you ever back in your halcyon days of yore did you ever use hallucinogens in any way?
No, I'm dull in every way.
The interesting thing about I tried LSD a couple of times, and I used mushrooms a couple of times, like I think twice each, and. Didn't really enjoy it that much. It's just not my thing. But what was interesting about it is that there is a lasting effect afterwards of well-being. That it almost feels like your brain is kind of cleansed. Like all of the cobwebs have been shaken out. And I can see why, like, low levels of this, because they said that the effects would last up to 6 months. And so I can see, you know, it really is. That was the most interesting to me experimenting with it as a crazy youth was I didn't like the hallucinating at all. But the after effects the next day and the day after that of just like going, wow, my brain feels better.
I'm reluctant to take anything that would alter my brain for 6 months.
I didn't enjoy taking anything that I couldn't sober up from if I needed to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like
was my thing.
But it's like if you say, well, the effects last up to 6 months. If the effects are great, then wonderful. But otherwise, it's like being given the wrong pair of pants you have to wear from January through June.
Well, but you're not hallucinating or any of that stuff afterwards once it wears off. But it's just, I didn't enjoy it. So, but
Don Taylor's not a role model.
Kids. Don't do what I did.
Hey, were you going to contact one of the weed giving doctors?
Oh, that's right, I was.
I gotta get that done.
I need to make a note about that.
You weren't so high all the time. You might remember these things.
I know. If I wasn't like just chewing on fistfuls of Vicodin, I could remember to call the weed doctor.
I suppose that's true. That's a wash, though. Really, who can blame you? Here's Don Taylor.
Men are more susceptible than women to memory problems in old age, according to a new study. Mild cognitive impairment, a condition in which people have problems with memory or thinking beyond that explained by normal aging, can lead to Alzheimer's disease. The new research, published September 7th in the journal Neurology, found that mild cognitive impairment is 1.5 times more common in men than in women. This is the first study conducted among community-dwelling persons to find a higher prevalence of MCI in men, said study researcher Ronald Peterson, director of the Mayo Clinic's Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. If these results are confirmed in other studies, it may suggest that factors related to gender play a role in the disease. For example, men may experience cognitive decline earlier in life, but more gradually, whereas women may transition from normal memory directly to dementia at a later age, but more quickly.
I would also argue, now I'm not trying to stereotype. I would also say, this is anecdotal only, I have no scientific basis for this, but based on the admittedly not very large number of people I have known who have had dementia or Alzheimer's, just my experience, men are better at covering that up. Men are able to sort of, there's a word, it's ironic that I can't think of the word, but there's a word for it when you are, basically when you have momentarily had a gap in your thinking and you can't, you're like, who are these people, who am I, where am I at right now? But you're sort of, it's happened enough that you're sort of aware of it, you know, that it's a recurring phenomenon. And so you train yourself to sort of just keep talking and to fill those gaps until it all comes back to you. Ah, my name is Ted. This is my wife. All right, here, I'm at home. And you just kind of keep the words coming and then, you know, because it lasts 3 or 4 seconds and you can just talk past it. And just in my experience, women are much more likely to go like, you know, I got this whole thing where I can't remember stuff lately. And it's like, I just blank for a second. Whereas guys don't ever want to say that. And so they just keep talking really forcefully about whatever it is that I was saying right now in a very, very strong tone, perhaps giving inflections up and down so that you think that I understand. Oh, hello, Don. How are you?
And then you just start calling everybody guy and sport
and
sweetheart, because then you don't have to remember their name.
Exactly. That's really what it is. And then I ask why all these dragons are in my room.
That's all of our science news for today.
There was a great, speaking of dementia, there was a great infographic joke in the Onion newspaper a few years ago. I guess it would have been actually quite some time ago, so it would have been maybe 10 years ago or something. And it was a takeoff on the sort of USA Today, like, who's eating birthday cake or, you know, whatever. But the infographic in the front of the Onion was, who's being menaced by elves? And then 12% was Ronald Reagan, which is funny, but also doesn't make any sense at all. Here's Don Taylor.
I'm just waving the
run sheet. Oh, I thought it was a news story. I'm not trying to do that thing where I pointed out. I just honestly couldn't tell what you were holding
waving the run sheet at you like, remember this?
I'm actually ahead of the game here. Am I not?
No.
Am I behind with the thing? Okay, I'll do that next then.
Okay. All right. Over the past 2 years, Betty White has hosted Saturday Night Live, starred in The Proposal and the upcoming You Again, and headlined the TV hit series Hot in Cleveland. White is 88 years old and discussed that she doesn't mind spending her golden years acting.
Love what you do. Why not do it? And the fact that you're still asked to do it. I keep hearing that, well, once a woman passes 40, you know, they can't get a job. Well, I'm a little bit past 40. Just a little. But I'm truly grateful, and it's a privilege.
You know, I don't think I've ever actually seen, I mean, I've seen a picture when she was younger. I don't think I've ever really seen a picture of her when she was young, like 19.
Oh, she was quite a lovely
woman. Was she a knockout?
She was.
Because how old, I mean, when is the first time that I would have seen her? How old would she have been? Because it was merely the Mary Tyler Moore Show, right?
Yeah, and I think she was 40-ish then.
All right, so I have no idea.
Well, she's 88 now, so she would have been like 50.
So she was, nearly middle-aged at that point.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. It's like when you just see, you know, you just see somebody who you have only known as an old person, and then you see a photo of them when they're younger, and it's like your brain doesn't quite want to reconcile it. You can't.
Holy moly, Angela Lansbury was hot.
Okay, was she hot?
Oh, yeah.
Now, was she hot or was she a handsome woman?
Oh, no, she was hot.
I'm not saying I don't believe you, but I'm saying I can't picture that.
No, Angela Lansbury was gorgeous.
All right.
When we have a moment, I will use my wiki skills and find you.
I'm getting a whole, like, HTTP 404 thing with that. So, well, in the meantime, let me just say that these ruminations on the attractiveness of Betty White as a younger woman are brought to you by, among other folks, Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland that offers Spanish language classes for adults Unlike old-fashioned institutions, Castalia focuses on real-life situations, and they work with authentic materials, and it means that they are centering on conversation, not on just sitting there and just having to memorize, a bunch of things that you're not going to actually be using in any sort of practical sense or verb conjugation for its own sake or whatever. You know, using Spanish takes precedence over actually just learning about Spanish. Especially because if you're using Spanish and you're able to, you're able to speak it conversationally, then by definition it seems like you're going to be interacting, with that culture more. And the learning about it will come sort of naturally. You got to be able to speak it first. Knowing Jan Hooks' monologue about Adobe from Pee-wee's Big Adventure isn't really going to help you figure out where the bathroom is,
No.
You know that's true.
And as someone in the text box said, I believe, earlier, or in the email said to me, you might want to point out that if you are traveling, say, and you meet an attractive young woman of Spanish or Hispanic descent, and you want to make a little time, you want to get be friendly. It helps
a romance
to speak
language.
Her own language.
Yes, that's right. You want to be able to speak to her not only in the international language of love, but also in the, Spanish. Well, in any event, PortlandSpanish.com is the website for that. PortlandSpanish.com, and class sizes are limited to 8 students. 8 students, which means you're going to get a lot more focused attention. Everybody kind of learns at the same rate because it's adults-only classes. But that also means you don't want to hesitate. Don't do the thing where you just wait and you go, I'll do it next week. Because that never happens. And then it's like next year, and then it's never done. So go to PortlandSpanish.com to find out more. PortlandSpanish.com, Castalia Language Center. Are you done Googling Betty White over there?
No, I was going to email you.
Sorry, Angela Lansbury.
I was going to email you the picture of Angela Lansbury.
You can
look at it at your leisure on your own.
Send that if you get a chance, unless you've already sent it. You can send that during the show. You send that to Rick at Rick Emerson if you get a chance.
That's what I just.
Okay, good. All right. Just because I never know where things end up and then it's in some other place and whatever.
No, it's its way. Sir.
All right. Let's see. Okay, I'm looking out for it. All right. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Thanks to a Good Samaritan, a man accused of flashing a 7-year-old girl in a bookstore faces second-degree felony charges of lewd and lascivious exhibition. Timothy Hall, 41, of Jacksonville, Florida, is accused of exposing his penis to the girl in the children's section of the Barnes & Noble on Saturday afternoon. He left by the time police arrived, but senior airman Brian Alder tracked him down at the Borders bookstore a few blocks away.
Beat his ass.
Hey, if this guy gets his jollies off of kids at a bookstore, Alder said, he might be doing it again. On a hunch, Alder drove to the Borders at Cypress and Dale Mabry Avenue, where he saw a man matching the suspect's description. I walked back towards the kids' section, and sure enough, he was standing right there. He had a book in his hands, but he was looking towards the kids' section of the bookstore, and I just knew that it was him. Alder called police, who approached Hall in the children's section. He refused to follow the officer's demands, then became aggressive when officers tried to arrest him. An officer shocked Hall with a taser, and he was booked into custody.
Seriously, just a whole bunch of broken toys wandering around there. Florida is just one. Florida is sort of, what it is? Florida's like the dollar store where God sends all of his defective and discontinued merchandise. What are these? They're pina colada Pop-Tarts. We can't sell these. Send these to the dollar store. That's really what this is. Who's this? Well, he's a grown man who likes to show his penis to small children. Okay, send him to Florida or Germany. Here's Don Taylor.
A police officer trying to stop a fleeing driver was temporarily blinded when her pepper spray blew back into her face.
Fail.
Hillsborough police said they tried to pull over Damian Claudis at about 2:30 p.m. Sunday near Northeast Grant Street and 25th Avenue. Officer said he didn't have a license plate on his car and has an outstanding warrant for violating parole. Claudis pulled into a driveway and fled. As he was running away, an officer tried to blast him with pepper spray, but the wind blew it back in her face. The search of the area was unsuccessful in finding Claudis. Anyone with information about Damian Claudis is asked to call the police.
See, this ought to be the next thing they do. The step up from the taser ought to be, it's like a taser in that it, shoots darts. Because the thing is, for the taser to work, the darts have to go into your flesh. It sticks you.
I think so, yeah.
It's not like a stun gun. Yeah, they stick into you. So you ought to do that where it tases you, but then it just fills you full of some noxious chemical, or it just fills you with, a sedative. Why don't they do that, now that I'm thinking about it? Why don't they just dart you and then it just tranquilizes you with some drug? That seems like a better way to go because the tasers don't seem to work all that well anyway.
It's probably more expensive.
I mean, they're fun, but I mean, I suppose.
And then if somebody, had a bad reaction to the drug, it would be even worse, I guess, than when they have heart attacks from being tased.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So the bad reaction to the tasing seems to be death, so it's all relative.
I don't know. I don't understand. I guess I do understand, but there's this part of me that really doesn't understand why cops don't shoot to wound instead of shoot to kill. But then someone explained to me it's because if you shoot somebody in the kneecap, then they can sue the city.
Well, and also because it's a lot harder to do because it's smaller target and it's moving. That's why everybody asks the same thing about, like, if you're it's funny. It's funny that liberals and conservatives ask the same question for totally different reasons. Because liberals all say, well, why don't they just shoot to wound? Why do they got to go right for the chest with the guy or, you know, whatever? Whereas conservatives all go, well, he's still alive. Why don't you shoot for the head? Aim to kill. And it's something because your head and your kneecap are both kind of small. So, you know, the thorax, right there.
The chest is nice and wide.
Yes,
it's
it
a
is,
wide
Dawn.
Target.
That's right. It's a tabula rasa.
Did you see the picture of Angela Lansbury?
No, they haven't. It hasn't arrived yet. I'm keeping an eye.
Really?
Yeah, it's not there.
How is that possible?
You sent it to rick@rickemerson.com?
I did.
Yeah, it's not there. I guess I can check my spam folder. Hold on a second. Let me check my... let's see.
Yeah, Angela Lansbury set as a filter
well,
for spam.
Well, she keeps trying to get me to bail her out of jail in Nigeria, and I'm not doing that again. It just took forever last time. No, I got another.
Okay.
Well, I'll keep an eye out.
Well, let's do our entertainment news.
All right, here's your entertainment news for Tuesday, right here at Legion of News on PDX.fm.
Music star Justin Timberlake has reopened his golf course located just outside Memphis, Tennessee. In January, Timberlake closed the Miramichi course to implement a renovation plan. Timberlake said the name means place of happy retreat. Timberlake said the closure was to improve playing conditions, such as greens, bunkers, and other areas. The renovation also added more wetlands and native plants. Formerly known as Big Creek Golf Course, Miramichi is a luxurious and upscale par 72 golf course, which stretches more than 7,400 acres. The project has been the dream of Timberlake, along with the Harlesses, his mother Lynn and stepfather Paul. The course opened to rave reviews on July 24th of last year. The first phase of the project cost $16 million. A price tag has not been put on the most recent renovations. The course was awarded the Gold Environment Organization seal for being the first green golf course in the United States.
Here's the thing I'm going to say. This may seem heretical.
Okay.
Is that Betty White?
That's Angela Lansbury.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that Angela Lansbury?
That is Angela Lansbury.
She was a dish.
Yes. Yes, she was.
She had a little Storm Large thing going on there.
Kind of, yeah, now that you mention it.
Interesting.
Bit.
Well done, Angela Lansbury. Good genes on you.
Yes.
This may seem like a heretical thing to say this statement, but it does seem very much, just based on his career arc so far, it does seem very much like Justin Timberlake is sort of on track to be... Everybody keeps saying, like, well, who will be the next Frank Sinatra? It really does seem like it's going to be him. And if you remember, because Frank Sinatra was he was a fan of the Teeny Bopper set, and he wasn't taken seriously. Men in particular despised him because they were all, you know, fighting Jerry or whatever overseas, and meanwhile, their, you know, girls are back home sort of swooning over Frank Sinatra, who was considered a very lightweight singer because he was a crooner, which they took to mean that he didn't have a strong voice.
And he weighed like 25 pounds.
Yeah, and he was a stick. And then he was considered washed up until he did From Here to Eternity and blah, 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 blah. And Timberlake's already one up on him because Timberlake has got, you know, a huge popularity among men and women. He can act. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't always pick the best films, but he can really act. And he has transitioned from teen idol to adult star with credibility and with a great amount of success. He seems to have stayed relatively sane and normal. And he's like, you know,
he's pretty smart with his money.
Yeah, and he's like still close with his family, and they're getting a golf course or whatever. Like, you could find him. Or, I mean, where is it at? Is it
Tennessee?
So, I mean, it's like, I'm just telling you that that guy seems to have, as they said about Harrison Ford, seems to have won everybody else's career in a poker game. Here's Dawn Taylor.
The annual Jerry Lewis MDA Telethon raised nearly $59 million over Labor Day weekend. A tearful Lewis voiced his gratitude over the final total while the final total was announced. This would be
I know. I'm just building up to it.
Jerry Lewis. MDA Telethon.
All right, hold on.
$59 million.
Yeah, I know. All right.
Jerry Lewis.
All right, are you ready?
I am so overcome by what we have done. Because I guess in the back of my mind and my heart...
You asked for this.
If we struck out, I wouldn't know how to look at my kids. What did I do wrong?
Make him go... Okay, no.
That's
no,
only that's one. We've got another one.
Wow, that's even more painful than the Yoko Ono having an orgasm. I don't want to hear it. I don't. Because it says what it is here. It says Jerry Lewis sings his...
Walk on.
No!
I'm so overcome by what we have done.
I guess at this point, we are only hopeful that the regulators will give us some clarity about
I wish this guy would host a telethon.
And then we can plan on that basis.
I want William Borucki to host a telethon. Oh. I could listen to him every day.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates.
I would totally donate the money if this guy did that.
I believe about half of those will probably turn out to be plans.
I love him.
Oh, fantastic. William Borucki. I don't even remember the last time I watched the Labor Day telethon. I mean, it's got to have been 10 or 12 years ago.
I completely forgot it was on. I was at home, and my husband was flipping the channels around, and I looked up, and there was Jerry Lewis. I went, oh, yeah.
Was he sweating?
Oh, yeah. He was all greasy.
Was this Big Jerry or Skinny Jerry?
It was Big Jerry.
Yeah.
He's puffy on some kind of steroids to keep him alive, Jerry.
Well, it's astounding that he's not dead, because leave aside the fact that he's apparently just a huge pill popper, or was for most of his life. But also, he's like 1,000 years old.
I think he's one of those guys like Dick Cheney.
Just
sheer rage and evil is keeping him alive.
Too angry to die.
Yeah.
The Jerry Lewis story.
It's like he and Gallagher will stay alive forever, just fueled by their anger.
Well, isn't everybody else from the Rat Pack dead? I mean, even the extended Rat Pack.
Yeah, I think so.
Even Jilly Rizzo is dead.
Shirley MacLaine is still alive. She was sort of...
She kind of counts, I guess.
Yeah, she kind of counts.
But I mean, everybody... All those other... I guess Rickles, maybe, if you count him as sort of an honorary...
Yeah.
He's a peer, one supposes.
I think everybody else is
I fine. Mean, it's basically Don Rickles, Jerry Lewis, Shirley MacLaine, and like... You know, but then you get down to the real third, you're like Alan King, you know? And it's like... But everybody else is, man. Everybody else snuffed it a long time ago. Hey, this is a thing we keep talking about doing on the Rick Emerson Show. We haven't yet, but one of these days we're going to have Michael Beatty from The Cleaning Solution on the show. It sounds vile. We're just going to stain things all day. But we're just going to, you know, just like grind, maybe not into our own carpet. Not that I don't have faith in him, but you don't want the landlord to see you doing that.
Yeah.
But maybe just, you know, just get a good variety of carpet swatches and then a good variety of things with which to stain them. And then just, you know, have him do sort of a real-life demonstration, like the OxyClean thing where he just says, you know, look at how this takes iodine right out, or whatever. You can contact Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution, at 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211, a locally owned and operated business. And he not only advertises here, he keeps his money right here, but, of course, all of his supplies, his accessories, chemicals, all of that stuff, the equipment that he needs for his business, for his cleaning of your carpet, or your residence, your office, all of that stuff he tries to buy from other Portland businesses. So whether you got damage to your carpet because of maybe pets, or you just got odors or stains, or you're moving into a new place, do you ever move into an apartment and it's like maybe you're, of modest means, and you move into a place and you just go, this carpet hasn't been washed like ever, and you just got to get it to, you know, you want to get it clean, but you don't want to just be, you know, lugging one of those rental things from Albertsons or whatever. You call Michael Beatty, The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. You'll feel good about yourself because you've, really more important than helping yourself, you've helped me, and that's really what counts most in this life. The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211. What are you showing me over there?
There's a young Betty White.
She looks like Madonna, on the other hand. She's like a dead ringer for Madonna. If you were to look at Madonna, like True Blue era Madonna, she and Betty White are freaking identical there. That's just weird. Hey, you know who was just scorchingly hot when she was younger? See, if you were a guy, Don, I would be asking you right now, who's the oldest woman you would still F?
Oh, wow.
If you were a guy, though, Don,
Who's
the oldest woman you would still F? I got my answer right
Judy
now.
Judi Dench.
Now, see, really?
I don't know.
No, but
I was just trying to think of some older woman that I think is attractive.
No,
like,
but she's...
Like Helen Mirren's pretty hot.
I would say Helen Mirren. Judi Dench is one of those chicks that's only attractive to other women, though. I'm asking if you were, you know...
Sophia Loren is still hot, and she's like in her 70s.
People say that, and I wonder if that's really true. I wonder if I just think that because everybody's told me that.
Every time I see her, though, she looks damn good. They haul her out for, like, the Academy Awards every few years. And, I mean, I don't know how much of her, like, is engineered with constrictive
putty
undergarments or something, but she still looks pretty good.
I'll reveal it next hour.
Okay.
The oldest woman I would still F. All right. And then we'll see if we can get her on the show. Sort of complete that circle. It's Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up today at 1 o'clock, featuring sci-fi fantasy author Terry Brooks. Also a recap of Sunday's Mad Men. Yesterday was vacation. We were here working hard to provide entertainment, but many people had the day off or they were vacationing or whatever. So today we'll recap Sunday's Mad Men. We have another installment of the greatest songs ever made. And also Penis Watch, Geek Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch. This is Don Taylor.
New on TV tonight is the season ender of Louis. Considering he He's written and directed every single episode of his sitcom's first season. So check it out. It's awesome. Tonight's episode is called Night Out, and it's an episode where he goes out for the night.
You lent me an episode of that I have yet to watch, but I'm sure I'm going to enjoy it.
It is true. Now you could actually, if you want to, just start at the beginning and watch the whole season because it's done now.
Is it on FX?
It is on FX.
So it's like got to be like only a 10 or 13 episode season anyway.
Yeah.
Awesome.
The season 3 of Sons of Anarchy begins this evening. The Sons of Anarchy is still reeling from Abel's kidnapping, especially Jax, whose deep grief leaves him feeling even more conflicted about his future.
And that's not much of a spoiler. I mean, I guess it is a spoiler, but knowing even, not that you even watched, you don't watch the show, so you don't even understand what you just read.
No.
But even if you did, even if you knew, oh, that's that character and Jax is so-and-so, it's not like, there's spoilers and then there's spoilers. It's not like a Who Shot JR spoiler. Knowing what happens there doesn't in any way diminish the greatness of that show and will not diminish your enjoyment when you finally finish the goddamn Shield and then watch Sons of Anarchy, which takes place in the same universe. So you got to watch that.
But shouldn't I watch the Wire first, or should I just go directly
You're
to
never
going to
watch The Wire. You keep saying that.
I am in episode 6 of the first season of The Wire right
really?
Now.
You
yes.
are. Well, you
yes.
didn't. Why didn't you tell me that?
Well,
I thought we had a relationship. I thought we were. Do I not bleed if you cut me? Am I not human? Are we not men?
I've been chipping away at it slowly. I've been watching The Wire. I have.
You watch the episodes in a single sitting?
No, I don't.
No.
There's a lot to process.
Yes, there
the
is. That's why you got to watch it. I'm not saying you watch the season in a single sitting.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying you watch the episode in a sitting.
Usually.
Okay.
Not always, but usually.
Here's the thing, and you'll get this the more and more, we'll talk more about this next hour, the more and more you get into it, you realize they don't spoon feed anything to you. If you lose track, that's your fault, and they will never, ever stop to explain anything on that show. I'm so proud of you. Well done.
Oh, well, thank you. There's an ABC special tonight, Nightline Prime, Secrets of Your Mind, Why We Do.
Why We Do?
That's what it says. That might be
Speaking
wrong.
Speaking of The Wire.
The relationship between the brain and food is explored tonight, including the brain's impact on obesity. It's a report on an obese woman who finally turns to brain surgery in hopes of losing weight.
You're doing it wrong.
And an episode of POV on PBS looks at Avery, a Brooklyn, New York teenager who was adopted by a white Jewish lesbian couple and also lives with two brothers, one Korean, one half black and half Puerto Rican. And an identity crisis that she suffers when she writes to her birth mother.
Are they just rooting through the trash outside Norman Lear's house now and just sort of like, I don't know, says something Jew, something, something Asian? I don't know. Yeah, see what you can do with it. Just piece it together. All right, we're done.
Are we?
There we go.
Okay.
God almighty. Thus, we bring the curtain down on another exciting installment of Legion of News. Don't forget the Rick Emerson Show comes up next at rickemerson.com, featuring an interview with sci-fi fantasy author Terry Brooks. Also, Mad Men recap. Also, we'll discuss the oldest woman I would still have sexual relations with. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, and Chief of Staff is one Ms. Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This, on the other hand, has been another exciting installment of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.